Hello, my friends, and thank you for joining us here again on Expanded Perspectives. Yep, it's me. I'm Cam. Over here is Mr. Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody?
And we, for those of you that follow on like Instagram or especially on Facebook and all that, you've already known. I mean, and all the elite lizards, they heard about it last week, but you already know what's going down today. But before we get into that, and I'll tell everybody what's going down. Nick Redfern is in studio sitting with us, so it was a great interview. We had a wonderful time talking to Nick with dinner. I mean, we had a great time hanging out with Nick, and this is probably fixing to be one of those things that happens often the way it is, because we just had a ball. We spent most of the day just all hanging out, laughing, and cutting up. But so I think you're going to like it. We talk about a little bit of everything. We talk about some of his books, some of his ideas, some of the, you know, just the average everyday stuff. It sounds like you're going to be hanging out with us like you would be if we were just having a few beers, because we were.
I love picking his brain, man. Yes. He knows so much about all these different topics. I mean, he really is one of my favorite authors.
Yeah.
Really.
It's like an encyclopedia. It really is. And there's, he brought up some stuff on mic, and then he also did off mic. That makes me think that, like, I've never thought down those roads. Like, I've never went that direction with it. You know what I mean? So, I mean, he brought up a bunch of stuff that, I don't know, it expanded my perspective.
Yeah, right?
Well, I hope everybody is having a wonderful day. Everything's going great. Me and Kyle got a few little cool stories that we had found these. And Kyle was telling me something about a CB, because we were always laughing about the old Nextel phones. But, you know, you got a phone to call a phone, but then you have to put a walkie-talkie in your phone.
Yeah, you remember that? You would, like, make a beeping sound, and you could talk to somebody like you're on a walkie-talkie. And I was always like, well, but it is a cell phone. Why don't you just call them? Like, I don't understand the point.
Yeah, it's too much work.
You're so lazy that you can't wait the 5 seconds it takes to dial. I mean, you can have it on speed dial, so still it's only one button.
I don't know. I guess it was, I don't know.
That's, well, it must not confusing. Have been very popular, because you don't see it anymore.
It didn't last long, no. What were you telling me about a CB?
No, yeah, check this out. This came from Open Minds TV, and it's about a CB alerts a Texas truck driver to multiple hovering UFOs.
Uh-oh.
Now, this is pretty cool. It talks about a Texas truck driver who was driving westbound along I-10 near Seguin, who ignored CB warnings of upcoming UFOs at mile marker 599 until he had his own encounter nearby. Now, according to the testimony in Case Cam, get ready, 65437 for the Mutual UFO Network. The witness reporting.
One more time again.
65437, right? It sounds a lot like 65537 to me, but
8675309. Okay,
I got it. Now, the witness says, I ignored it. But they kept talking about these UFOs, strange lights that made a truck crash. And when an object crossed over the highway at mile marker 599, it was emitting intense heat. He said some not so pleasant words, and then I kept driving. But soon the trucker had his own encounter. He says, while at mile marker 614, I saw it through the fog, very bright floodlights on the right. As I got closer, I saw the brightest, clearest lights in approximately a 200-foot-wide circle, with one light missing. Now, I'm guessing that there were about 11 lights in the circle, and the one in the middle was emitting a beam straight at the ground about 15 feet from the roadway. Now, the witness also stated earlier that he felt heat from the lights, which is pretty cool. He says, as I drove under the object's lights at about 65 miles an hour, I could actually feel intense heat, even with the AC blowing directly in my face. Now, he said that there was multiple objects hovering in the area. About 100 yards down the road, there was another one on the left. And 100 yards down further, there was another one on the right. And another 100 yards down, there was another one on the left. They did not move, and they made no sound. Now, this trucker said he had not believed in UFO reports before, but seeing was believing for him. He says, I have not been a believer in UFOs, but I am now. I've never seen anything like that ever. And I used to live on the Dugway Proving Grounds in Utah in the early 80s, where I saw lots of strange things flying around real fast and then disappear. But it meant absolutely nothing to me. This scared me so bad that it has changed my life and the way I see it. I will never look into the sky the same way again. Now, the witness was able to verify that a trucker had indeed turned over his truck at mile marker 599. He said, when I got to the mile marker 599, there was an 18-wheeler overturned on the westbound side. If any of you truckers that witnessed and heard what I called you, well, let this be my apology. I will never doubt you again. So, he was, you know, not a UFO believer until he had this encounter, and it's forever changed him. And he's like apologizing, because I guess when they were originally on the CB warning him of it, he's like probably said something to him like, oh, you crazy wackadoos.
Yeah.
You don't know what you're talking about. But he's a believer now. So pretty interesting case.
Well, and it happens, and we've discussed it too. It happens with a lot of people that doubt a lot of these things, or just super skeptical about it. And then whenever they have their very own little experience, that's when it changes everything. We've known people.
I mean, life changing.
Yeah. It does work that way. Kyle, I've got this, folks. This is a little interesting sighting about what they say two hikers spot a Bigfoot there in Ohio. And it got me to thinking, several years ago, my son, of course, was on the high school wrestling team several years ago. And we went to a place in Ohio, Jeff Jordan's state champ camp up near Urbana, Ohio. And there was a fellow that worked there. One of the coaches that worked there told a story, and I think I've actually got it on video, but I'm going to see if that fella still works there and talk to him. But he had told a story about seeing like a dog man, and I thought it was really odd back then. I mean, it was before I'd ever even heard of the term dog man, you know.
Right.
And he had told a story to all the kids in that whole deal about seeing one, and it was one that he didn't really want to tell the story. It was Jeff made him tell it, called him out on it one evening when they were doing all the deal after the drilling and the dinner was over. Everybody was just hanging out. There was probably 200 people there at the thing, and they got him up and he told the whole story and kind of reenacted right. What he saw. And it was a pretty neat thing. It just seems to be something about Ohio. It's almost like a magical area. They spot all kinds of stuff, kind of creatures. So that's what's funny is because it's almost like a synchronicity. I've been thinking about that. You know, I told you about it.
I remember you telling me that weeks
then
ago.
This pops up. I see this. I'm like, oh, well, this is from Canfield, Ohio. Tyler Smith says he and his daughter were riding their bicycles on a bike trail when they witnessed a creature run across a field out there. Now, Tyler says, I saw something going into the woods and then it went onto a little path. Now, he also took a YouTube video. This is pretty good thinking. Of the location just seconds after the reported encounter. So he whipped out his phone if he didn't get it. So he's filming where he was at.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, it's not quite as good as getting it whenever it comes running out. But, you know, like we always say, it's hard to get deep. Like, oh, you're on your bike, you pull out, you got to start filming. But it is neat to be able to maybe get your, of course, it's only a 40-second video, but to be able to get your feelings about it and things like that. But it does show a very long field that looks like it's got, you know, small rows in it. And then it also shows where it connects to a patch of like woods, like a tree line. Now, Tyler says that it was dark, furry, and it was walking on two legs. He said that the sighting lasted about a second and a half. And he says, I swear I saw something. I'm serious. I saw that thing. Now, he says he's working on getting more visual data from the area, and he hopes to be providing some updates soon, you know, so he can pack it on the YouTube channel. But it was, I don't know, just to me, the minute I saw it, there's all kinds of sightings. And then, of course, like I said, even in this article, they go back into some Bigfoot sightings from 1869, which is some of the stuff that I'd covered just, last week we talked about some older sightings. Then they also, he brings up the fact that in that area there was a 1980. And then, of course, that's, you know, we always talk about the grass man.
Right.
So, I mean, there is a lot of strange things happen right up there in the farmlands of Ohio. Of course, like I said, when I was there, it was beautiful. So I could see why, if I was going to be a hairy cryptid, I would definitely live there in Ohio. It's a very nice place.
Well, let's move on to the interview today. Like for anybody that's been living under a rock and doesn't know who Nick Redfern is, he's an author. He's a lecturer and a journalist. He writes about the wide range of unsolved mysteries. He writes about things like Bigfoot, UFOs, the Loch Ness Monster, alien encounters, even government conspiracies. Now, he's got dozens of books like the Zombie Book, which is recent, The Close Encounters of the Fatal Kind, Monster Diaries, and there's numerous others. I mean, this guy is a writing machine. He probably writes 5 books a year, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's got a huge
list. This year especially, yes.
So you can go on Amazon and find all his stuff. He also writes for Cryptomundo. He writes for the Mutual UFO Network Journal. He writes for, of course, our friends over at Mysterious Universe. And, of course, he's appeared on numerous television shows, including Fox News, Ancient Aliens, Monster Quest, UFO Hunters, VH1's Legend Hunters, National Geographic Channel's The Truth About UFOs and the Paranormal. He's even been on the BBC's Out of This World, MSNBC's Countdown, Sci-Fi Channel. I mean, the list goes on and on and right. on about this guy. I mean, he is mastered when it comes to writing about these for TN topics. And he's a friend now of mine. He's a friend of yours, Cam. And an incredible man to talk to. I mean, you can literally pick his brain about everything. And in today's show, I mean, we're talking about his brand new book, Secret History. conspiracies from ancient aliens to the New World Order. We talk about things like the possible escape of Adolf Hitler. We talk about the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. We talk about his thoughts on the Patterson-Gimlin film and other strange things. So without further ado, folks, Mr. Nick Redfern.
All right, folks, we've been promising this for a while, and, well, it's going down. We've been sitting in here for over an hour now, just BSing and not even recording, and so we decided we'd all get our stuff together and fire it up. Today, like we talked a little bit about last week, we have a friend in studio, only the second person to ever join us in studio, sitting to my immediate left, my good friend, my colleague, mi amigo, Mr. Nick Redfern. Nick, how you doing?
Hey, Cam. I'm doing good, thanks.
We're sitting over there. I still got Kyle. Of course, yep. Kyle's still here.
Hi, I'm
Kyle.
Right here. How are you, Nick?
I'm good, thank you.
Good.
Yeah, we've been in here talking, folks, and just laughing and cutting up. Nick's been telling us we were laughing because he's a busy man. When you're not riding, he's traveling literally all the time. It is crazy. But it did sound like you're going to have the summer off for a little bit, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's like when I have a book out, I'm like the Duracell bunny or something, you know. Just plug the battery in on a go kind of thing, you know. But yeah, I mean, it's what you have to do when you got a book out. You know, you do radio, you do lectures, TV. But I mean, I enjoy being on the road. I enjoy traveling.
Yeah.
And so it's, to me, it's not stressful. But I like the fact that it pretty much comes in sort of sections where if I got a book out, there's like a couple of months where you are busy.
Mm-hmm.
Then I've got 3 or 4 months off where I just, you know, I'm just writing at home in the day, but I'm not, you know, doing lectures and traveling. I think from mid-June through to the end of September, I don't have any traveling on. You know, things might crop up between now and then, but then there'll be that insane period when the books come right. out in September when I'll be, you know, packing those Duracell batteries
back
together.
To the grind again. Yeah. Paradigm and Jefferson, you're going to be. But it is, I don't know, it's one of those things, it's part of the deal. This is what you have to do. You got to put it in.
But I don't consider it, you know, a hassle or a chore or work or an obligation. I do it because I enjoy it. I enjoy hanging out with people at conferences. You know, I mean, I get to see a lot of behind the scenes things at conferences, and I never understand why it is. You see some of the speakers, you know, they want to go straight back to the hotel room. They don't want to mingle. They want to sign books. Or if they do, they're looking at the watch because they just assign, you know, 15 minutes for signing books, and it's like now it's 17 minutes, and you know, and they're getting pissed by it. It's like, well, the way I look at it is, if people buy the books and come to the lectures, you know, the only reason I can do what I do is because of those people who buy the books or come along. The very least, you know, at the very least, you can do is be there for the people. You know, and you shouldn't even have to think about it. It should be a natural thing to just want to hang out with these people and sign books and have a good time and be relaxed, you know, a few drinks and dinner and everything else. Because you to give something back to the person. And so that's why I enjoy it. I don't consider what I do, you know, the things I'm required to do for the books. It's not a chore.
It's because you're
work.
A good guy, Nick.
Well, I just enjoy it. You know, it's fun going to new places, meet new people, hanging out and whatever.
It is fun.
Well, and it's people like you that make going to the conferences so fun, because not only do they get to learn things when they hear the various speakers speak, but the fact that you are very easy and very approachable, it's nice for people to get to meet you. Because I remember the first time I ever met you, you know, before we got there, I didn't know what to think. And I was like, well, maybe I'll get to talk to him. And then, you know, you were immediately very open. I saw you in the parking lot before, and you offered me some chips, some potato chips.
Yeah, you're like, come on over.
And I remember talking to Cam afterwards. I was like, man, was he not a super nice guy? I mean, you are. I mean, very nice, very approachable. And I really appreciate being able to talk with authors like yourself.
Oh, well, thanks. Yeah.
And now we got you in here. So yeah, there's no escape.
But I'm always carrying potato chips around.
Right.
I'm gonna have a packet of potato chips like lowered into the coffin when they lower me down, just in case of, you know, I kind of wake up halfway through or something.
I need a chip. And well, that's because you ask us, you're like, would you like a chip? And Kyle was like, is he talking about French fries?
Yeah.
What is he talking about? I'm like, I don't know. You pull out the chips. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. All right, we're on the same level. All right, I got you. Yeah.
Well, I've actually become used to sort of swinging back and forth between English phrases and American phrases, depending on who I'm speaking to.
Bouncing around, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad. Yeah, I was like, I'll take a French fry, maybe. All right, no, all right.
Or a chili. Doesn't really matter which one it is. It still tastes good.
It's still good. Just bring them on. Yeah.
Yeah, either way.
Nick actually brought Kyle and I some presents when he came in. I actually have a German edition of the pyramids and the Pentagon. A full German. And this thing is badass.
Yeah, and I got a German version of Keep Out.
Yeah.
So very cool.
I love it. I love it. But we got in our hands right now, folks, the secret history. What is this? Conspiracies from Ancient Aliens to New World Order. This is Nick's brand new book.
Yeah, that one's just come out like 2 weeks ago with Visible Ink Press. And it's the second book I've done with them. The first one was the zombie book last year. And they do sort of a good production. They're very different to a lot of the other books I do, which typically are sort of 70 to 75,000 words. Visible Ink Press, they put out more sort of encyclopedia A to Z type books of like 150,000 words, which is that's what they require, is 150,000 words, whereas I said most of the other ones are do around about 75 to 80,000. So
Nick writes those in a week, folks, for those who are listening.
Yeah, right? Even I have, after my agent says, how long do you want, to write this book? I say, is it a VIP book? And they say, yeah. So I need another couple of months added onto the contract.
You cover everything in this book. There's so much stuff. I love the conspiracy parts, too. I love that. Well, and you cover Tunguska, and, you talk about things. And I just was looking in there, too, about Jack the Ripper. There's so many stories that you have in this book.
Well, yeah, I mean, that one, even the contents are a bit different to what a lot of the other books I've done. Because I tend to write a book on a theme, like Close Encounter of the Fatal Kind was mysterious deaths in ufology. Different cases, but that was the theme. Other ones, they've been on like the British Bigfoot reports or NASA, whereas that book covers, like you said, it's everything. Sort of there's a strange story or a conspiracy going back 1,000 years to the present day. And a lot of them have no connection beyond the fact that they are conspiracies. It's sort of like an alternative look at human history, if you like.
Well, and you've got a few more coming out. Of course, we're going to talk some about this book, but you've got a Bigfoot book, you've got a Chupacabra book, and then what we'll be talking about is The Blood of the Gods, which is something we're definitely going to have to chat about because that is mind-blowing to me. Let's talk about some parts out of this book.
All right.
The Abraham Lincoln assassination.
Well,
because I've heard a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Not even reading this yet, I've heard a lot of different things talk about the assassination, that it was... One of them was that he was a scorned lover, that they were, that Abraham Lincoln was homosexual and that was where it all started. I've heard these stories go far back there. Then I've heard that, he was wanting to do away with some of the banking systems and the way it was getting started. And that's what caused it. So there's a lot of theories floating around. What did you find?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's kind of like when you've got any sort of presidential assassination or a famous person, like with President Kennedy, it's probably the closest comparison. The multiple theories, and some of them could be sort of interlinked with each other, where it isn't necessarily just one person or one group. They could actually be working together. And you kind of find that with the Lincoln story. We have, as with the Kennedy assassination, you've got the established theory or story that it was John Wilkes Booth versus Lee Harvey Oswald, just the lone gunman. But was the lone gunman working with anybody else? And I mean, it's interesting you bring up the issue of the banking world, because that was one of the theories, the concerns that he was worried about, the banking industry, if you like, sort of almost taking over and, having control, know, that they almost the power of government, that just be such a, almost like a huge conglomerate.
A centralized banking system.
Yeah, like a centralized banking system where essentially they would become more powerful than the elected leaders. And so, the theory there is that this guy's got to go. Then you've got kind of similar things where people talked about the Illuminati and secret societies like the Masons or the higher levels of the Masons being involved from the perspective, again, really, of, the angle that it's not always the elected people who hold the power. It's the powerful figures behind the scenes in some of these secret societies and some of these sort of behind closed doors clubs, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, when they see the power being wrenched away from them, they hit back. They've got their hidden agendas. They've got their sort of tentacles all around the world, pulling strings here, pulling strings there. And... You know, could they take on a president? Well, yeah, they could. You know,
it's not easily
that difficult. So, but I think the those are sort of the broadly the main theories with the Lincoln assassination. But I think it's going to be like the Kennedy assassination. The longer time goes on, the harder and harder it comes to prove anything, and you're left with sort of nagging suspicions that even if it was just John Wilkes Booth, was he working to order, so to speak, rather than, oh, you know, I'm just going to kill this guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, it does. Well, and we were discussing off air and things, and we were talking about the Marconi incidents, and Kyle had talked about it, and we've talked to you about it before, too. And you bring up the banking thing. It's like the whole deal, even with Marconi, feels the same way. It's like when people get to a certain power, they have the ability to pretty much control whatever they want to control.
Yep.
And in order to keep it safe, sometimes people have to be erased. I had covered, like I had told you, I had covered a segment about James Forrestal and had talked about what you had found in the FOIA, this assassination paperwork. And we laughed because you were like, you would think the best way to do it would be, like you said, bring them into a room and then tell them face to face, this is how you do it. Let me teach you how to do it. Don't write this down. And it seems like they've learned from that. A lot of stuff you're not finding what's written down, but it's still just as crooked and crazy as it was even then. Well, and that's kind of what this Marconi deal feels. It's just like this, the banking thing. It's almost like they used them, and then when they got what they wanted, well, then it's like now in order to wrap up the loose ends, well, we're going to have to knock you off.
Yeah, it was, I mean, and bizarre circumstances to what, 31 different scientists that work there?
With Marconi, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, between 1982 and 1991, just over 30 scientists, technicians, staff members, people like that working for Marconi, many of them linked to sort of contract work on Ronald Reagan's Star Wars, the Strategic Defense Initiative, and related technologies, you know, were found dead or killed themselves, you know, in the carbon monoxide poisoning in the car. Others jumped off bridges, electrocuted themselves, muggings, deaths that seem to be accidental deaths that, you know, out of the blue, heart attacks in young, healthy people. And, you know, in any industry, you can find that. But when you've got 31 in a sort of clearly delineated organization, all interlinked in terms of the work they were doing for the most part, and to hear just time and time again from the government, from the British government, oh, it's coincidence. You know,
yeah,
there's nothing going on here. No, I mean, I'm not saying that all the deaths that were suicide were made to look like suicide, you know, that somebody else came in and did it. I actually think they did commit suicide, but it sounds in some cases that maybe they've been previously subliminally hypnotized or programmed to, you know, to perform the act themselves.
Yeah, to off themselves.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of weird work was done on a lot of the early mind control programs to create like trigger words that would essentially switch the person on, and they're almost like in a trance type state. And we do find that with a lot of those scientist deaths, that, you know, 1 minute everything was normal, got up, got dressed, shaved, showered, went to work, and then suddenly on the way to work, you know, at 70 miles an hour on the highway, pulled across to the other side and slammed straight into a cafe. That's what one of the guys did, and blew himself up, and the car exploded.
Yeah, what would possess somebody just out of the blue?
Exactly.
To do something like that. That's crazy.
That's what you find. A lot of those Marconi deaths, although there are lots of different ways in which they kill themselves, the one common strand is that most of the events were out of the blue. No one was expecting it to happen. There was no sign or inkling or anything like that. So.
It's the whole, I guess the whole thing of the secret history. You've covered a lot of books that talk about these strange things like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, have you ever gone back and looked at the timeline that you yourself have created to look at what you've uncovered as a whole, like set by yourself, and go, I've written books about this, and then start drawing the lines together to where it even tells a story on its own?
I probably actually haven't.
Because, I mean, you've uncovered a lot of stuff, a lot of strange things.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if you put it all together, you're right. I mean, you can find just weird files, weird deaths, strange encounters and reports, you know.
Because, I mean, I know you went back. What was the very first book you ever wrote was over the English government, I believe.
Yeah,
what
was called Covert Agenda.
That's. I figure if you start there and go through all the things that you found all the way up to date, because what was that?
That was 97.
I was going to say 97, I thought. Yeah, so if you go through all those over, 20 years worth of books, you get to that point. There's no telling what you could find.
Well, that's true. I mean, and that kind of, I guess in some respects, culminates with the secret history book, not in terms of it, you know, because it covers all the previous books, but because it demonstrates that there is a secret history.
Yeah.
You know, you can see that all around the world. And, you know, I think we've only barely sort of dug into it. You know, we're just still on the outside. We've got conspiracy theories. We've got snippets of this one and snippets of that one. We just haven't got the full story of any of them.
And it seems like we're kind of growing to that point. Like me, Kyle and I always talk about the fact of the freedom of information just due to the internet and the way people can share all these ideas and things. Yeah. And like, I'm looking at your blog that you always, was it Nick Redfern for 10.blogspot.com. And you update that. Mm-hmm. You write for Mysterious Universe. There's always places to find the things. So you cover a lot, but that's information that you can get out instantaneously. Mm-hmm. Like I could subscribe to the RSS instantaneously. I get your updates. It's that, it seems like it's going to it seems like be snowballing to where it's waking everybody up. It's getting everybody on the same page to go, man, maybe we should all look at this. I look at how fast the pushback against Monsanto built from everybody kind of going, man, something's not quite right about this, to where the whole world's like, wait a second, this isn't right. Yeah. This isn't a good thing. It seems like, and in this book, it's kind of like what you're going to. I mean, you're showing bits and pieces of all of these things. And I like that you called it secret history because I always think about, my father always told me that the history was written by the winners.
Yeah.
You never get to hear the other side of the coin. That's the way it always is.
Yeah.
And it's almost like you've turned the coin over. You're like, this is kind of what you don't know for a fact, but you've gathered, like we discussed, those small pieces and lumped them together and go, I can't say for sure this is what it is, but it's all pointing this way.
Yeah. Well, what I've tried to do with each chapter is, you know, demonstrate what the official story is, or, you know, if there was an official story, and then present the data that's been offered. So, for example, in the chapter in there on Jack the Ripper, I actually, you know, point out the main 10 to 15 theories as to who Jack the Ripper might have been, and offer the evidence which may be in support of this one person and which may not be in support, you know, with hindsight for this person. But we don't really still even know, you know. I mean, there was like a pretty conclusive conclusion reached last year with one guy, but then other people questioned that. So it's never really going to be properly settled. So what I try to do is not, you know, say to tell people it's definitely this, because we don't know, but offer data as to why this guy is an interesting candidate, but also why that guy is an interesting candidate, and where's the conflict? Obviously, it can't be both of them. And try and pick it apart and just see where it all leads. You know?
I love it. I can already tell you that this is going to be one of those books that I go crazy for. It always is. Just that's because I love those little threads of being able to find all that instead of like, I don't like it. I like the way that you do it because I don't like it when a lot of people come right out and go, okay, this is how it is. You know, this is it. This is my theory on it, and anybody else's theory is bunk. Whereas you just kind of offer up, this is all the stuff I found. What do you think? You know, here it is. And that's what I think I love the most about even all of them. Like the pyramids and the Pentagon or Keep Out, all that stuff. You're like, this is stuff that you find interesting. So you just gather up all the information and go, what does everybody else think?
Yeah.
And that's what I like the most about it. So I can already tell you that this book is going to be one of my faves already.
Yeah, one of the chapters actually is one of my favorite subjects. And it's about the escape of Adolf Hitler. We interviewed a man named Gerard Williams one time about his book Grey Wolf, which spoke specifically about that. What did you find, and what are your thoughts on this, you know, alleged conspiracy that Adolf Hitler actually survived World War II?
Well, I mean, it's probably one of the most controversial conspiracy theories out there, primarily because people think there's just no way that could happen. You know, it's just sort of it's just not possible. But, I mean, there are some interesting aspects to the story. You know, the official story is that as the Second World War sort of spiraled to its end, you know, Hitler realized that there was going to be no way back now, the Germans were going to lose the war. And so, you know, he killed himself. That's the official story. The official story is, you know, that the Russians got the body. There were supposedly photographs and bone analysis, and then that was questioned.
They were found burned, right?
Yeah. And the, you know, the remains, such as they were studied, and yes, this is Hitler. And then further down the line, it was no, it's not Hitler. And but what fascinated me, and the main reason why I wrote the chapter on this, is because, you know, a lot of people over the years have talked about Hitler surviving the war. But what I relied on in the book was the fact that just a couple of years ago, the FBI actually declassified a huge file on Adolf Hitler. They actually had a specific file dedicated to all the rumors of Hitler surviving the war. And they had their agents who were put on it to chase down every one of these stories. And it was basically like the Adolf Hitler survived the war theory file. That's literally what it
really?
Was. Yeah. Yeah. And they released that file. It's like it's hundreds and hundreds of pages.
Wow.
A dossier that, you know, the FBI opened because they felt that rather than write off these stories just being conspiracies or friend of a friend tales, well, we better look into them. Mm-hmm. And so that's what they did. They officially ordered like the creation of a study. And that file is interesting because, you know, it's not just talking about, oh, this Mr. X or, you know, some crazy guy told this story. A lot of the people, although the names are blacked out, you know, you've got credible sort of military and intelligence sources talking about how they'd heard that Hitler had been essentially smuggled out of Germany and then traveled by submarine and ship to South America. And there are different theories mentioned in the files about him going to Bolivia and Argentina and reportedly being seen. The reports in that file of people seeing him allegedly
and
in
even
South
had
America.
Some plastic surgery too, I think I heard rumors
yeah,
about.
Yeah, like reconstruction surgery and name changing, you know, just wow. People with like slush funds setting him up, you know, in a new environment. And so for me, had it not been for the FBI file, I probably wouldn't have covered that because, you know, you don't want to go over old ground and just copy what somebody else has done. But to actually get and handle the official hundreds and hundreds of pages of files, you know, did Hitler survive the war? That's so surreal, you know, that there was a file anyway.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so that's what I've done with that chapter, is to demonstrate that, you know, it's not just government agencies around the world don't just keep conspiracies. They actually, or hide them, they investigate them. That's what the FBI did. They weren't trying to hide this. They were trying to figure out, did Hitler survive the war? And if he did, we need to go and find him. It was like along those lines.
It always makes me, you saying that now with the FBI, it always makes me think about the fact that I know that the FBI and the CIA never got along and that they never spoke to one another. So it always makes me wonder, was the CIA behind it? And then the FBI was like, ooh, let's see if we can catch them doing something wrong. And that's one of the reasons that the FBI jumped onto it.
Well, I mean, we can never know for sure. And one of the things I would say is that the FBI has this really good website called The Vault. You know, a lot of people sort of knock government agencies for hiding this and hiding that. But the FBI have done a really good, praiseworthy job of creating this website called The Vault, which has literally got millions of pages on, you know, Bonnie and Clyde, Marilyn Monroe, wow. Kennedy, Watergate, Michael Jackson. It covers pretty much everybody and, you know, sort of extremist groups and
Nick Redfern. They probably have a file
they get one on Nick. They've got one on
yeah,
Nick,
right.
100%.
And, but what they've done, they've converted all these files into PDF and you can download them all for free. There's no cost, you know, just download the whole file. There's their UFO file, their cattle mutilation file, which is like about 200 pages long. All these cool reports from New Mexico of, you know, animals being dissected and whatever. And it's a really good site, you know, and you can download the Hitler file from there as
That's
well.
That's pretty
now.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, the website's Vault, VAULT,
yeah, the Vault.
FBI.gov. Yep.
Yeah, it's a good website.
Wow.
And That's it's all insane. Like A to Z, and it's all split into different sections like unexplained phenomena, gangsters, celebrities, historical figures, that kind of thing. So,
wow. Yeah. Yeah. Well, now, Nick, like I said before, you were coming out with some other books too. Now, Kyle's always bragging about him going to Puerto Rico and chasing giant snails down there. Never seen any chupacabra. Now, you've been chasing the chupacabra yourself.
Yeah, I've been.
For years, right?
Yeah, I've been to Puerto Rico many times. The first time in 2004 and the most recent in 2013. About 18 months ago, something like that. And I've also been on a lot of expeditions to Mexico and around the US where you've got these so-called Texas chupacabras. Mm-hmm. So I thought last year, with it sort of being 10 years of doing chupacabra investigations.
It's time.
Yeah, why not put out a full-length book that sort of chronicles all the investigations I've done? So that's what it is. It's sort of written in a road trip style as all the investigations happen, sort of driving around Puerto Rico in a rented Jeep and, you know, interviewing a chupacabra witness in the morning and then stopping off for a beer in some little shack,
nice.
You know, in the hills.
Yeah.
Then mm-hmm. in the afternoon, another interview. Then in the evening, you know, stop again in some little town and have a margarita and then head back to the hotel and see what data we've put together mm-hmm. for that day. And so that's sort of the spirit of the book. It's like an on-the-road, warts and all road trip. As I said, it covers Puerto Rico, Mexico, the United States, and to try and figure out, you know, what the chupacabra is or are. And one of the things that I point out in the book is that the original Puerto Rican chupacabra is clearly something different to the one in the United States, which is like a hairless canine.
Mm-hmm.
What's happened is that the name chupacabra has been applied to these American creatures when they're actually totally different physically and everything to the Puerto Rican ones, which are bipedal with wings, like bat-like wings mm-hmm. in some cases.
Yeah.
So in other words, it's anything in today's world that's sort of been perceived as a weird-looking animal, people say, oh, it's a chupacabra.
Yeah.
And that's what's happened. But that's the interesting part of the story, how the name has become ingrained with, you know, any kind of hairless-looking creature. I mean, I've seen reports of like a raccoon with mange, and people said, that's a chupacabra. I said, no, it's a raccoon with mange.
Yeah, I've seen that, like a bear. I've seen a black bear.
Yeah, they look really weird bears.
It looks terrifying.
Yeah, they do.
That hair.
They look like werewolves or something.
Yeah, you see it.
Like,
exactly. Like, what is that?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's just a black bear. But yeah, it's funny because it's the description of what we have here in Texas compared to what they come from Puerto Rico is totally opposite. Yeah. Nothing even the same.
Well, I'll tell you how it happened. I found this out doing the research from Ken Gerhard. Ken's a good friend of mine, and I don't think anybody has done more research into the US Texas chupacabra than Ken. I mean, he's traveled all across the US and, you know, been involved in the study of corpses and analysis and, you know, staked out farms, that kind of thing. And Ken explained to me that when there was one of the first attacks by one of these hairless canids in Texas, the rancher whose animals were attacked, he took a photograph and put it up in a local market in the San Antonio area. And a lot of the local Mexican people said, oh, it's a chupacabra. And that's how it spread. And then the media picked up on it. Chupacabra comes to Texas. But where I disagree with a lot of the skeptics, you know, they just say, well, they're just coyotes with mange. But they're not. There's actually several reasons why we can say that. One, you know, we see these things all over the place. You didn't see them before 2004.
Mm-hmm.
So, in other words, if it was an ongoing phenomenon, just coyotes with mange, we'd have been seeing them to those levels in 2000 or 1978 or whenever.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other thing, mange is caused by a mite, which gets into the skin, you know, causes irritation, causes hair loss. And the animals in such irritation and pain, they scratch themselves and itch and they bleed and infection sets mm-hmm. in. They often die. But the hair loss is patchy. Now, with these creatures, it's like they're 100% hairless. And there's very, very rarely any signs of scratching or irritation. So in other words, it's more like they're developing hair in a hairless fashion than its mange. Now, on top of that, they have a weird... Most of them have like a weird overbite where the top jaw is like an inch or so longer than the bottom jaw. You know, they should be uniform mm-hmm. together.
Right.
Their front limbs are kind of shorter, so they have like this weird hopping kangaroo movement.
Mm-hmm.
And if you Google kangaroo plus chupacabra, you'll find a lot of witnesses where they said it kind of jumped like a kangaroo. And they have these weird pouches on their hindquarters. They're literally just like two large circular pouches that stand up about an inch high and about this 2 inches round. So what the theory that I talk about in the book is, you know, could it be like some sort of pollution, you know, like a chemical pollution or something like that, or a spontaneous mutation in the species? So basically the book will be like a 50-50 study of the original Puerto Rican stuff and then swinging over to, you know, the US and Mexico and even Russia, where they've had reports that sound
really,
just,
yeah, really,
yeah.
I never heard of that.
Yeah, so there's, you know, you find, and they actually sound very similar. So
Maybe it's just an unknown animal.
Well, I mean,
you know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's just a very rare.
Yeah.
But I know what he's talking about is because, like we've always talked about, I've seen literally dozens mm-hmm. of mangy coyotes.
Yeah.
And I've seen some of them that even when they are, let's say, not 100% hairless, mm-hmm. most of the time you never do see the hair missing completely around their faces.
Yeah.
It's because they really can't get it off. They yeah. can't rub that part off as well because they can't reach it. Mm-hmm. But there's usually some tufts still on the tail and things. But everywhere their mouth can reach, mm-hmm. where they can chew at the skin, mm-hmm. usually that's where it comes off at. They work mm-hmm. it. And even when they scratch. So I've seen some nasty coyotes that are mangy, but they're scabbed over too, exactly. where they're constantly scabby. Mm-hmm. These photos of what we, you know, what people even refer to now as blue dogs, mm-hmm. you bring it up because it does, they're built almost like a big raccoon. Yeah. The way they're low in the front, a little bit higher in the back, they're almost like you said, like a kangaroo or a rodent, the way they move.
Yeah, they're like humped almost.
Yeah,
like
they the and there's a funky, like a blue gray color, mm-hmm. the skin. And it's that uniformly from the nose to the tip of the tail. Mm-hmm. And you see these pictures, like I've seen one from South Texas that was a dash cam video. And you see that and you're like, that's I've nothing that. Mangy. Like what the hell is that?
Yeah.
Like it doesn't look like anything I've ever seen before.
Well, they're not an unknown species because, I mean, DNA tests have been done and they've been shown to have, you know, coyote DNA and sometimes mixed with wolves and regular dogs as well.
So it's some type of canine.
So, oh, it's definitely canine. And I think a good 99% of the ones that have been found and that have been autopsied and studied are coyotes, but they don't look like, it's not just the hairlessness. As I said, they don't look like physically like regular mm-hmm. coyotes. So something is going on. And we might sort of be seeing like the development of a weird offshoot.
Like an offshoot like, species.
Like a spontaneous mutation, but we don't know why. That, you know, that's the big mystery. But the important thing is, although it's become known as the chupacabra, mm-hmm. and I'm sure that'll stick.
Yeah.
It's not the same thing on Puerto Rico. It's just the name has been applied. Now, of course, the Puerto Rican one is like an entirely different thing altogether.
Yes.
Where you've got all, you know.
Some claim that they have wings.
Yeah, like but people have talked about them having bat-like wings, not bird-like wings, but, you know, sort of membranes and leathery.
A very disturbing thought, because why is it feathers make it okay?
Yeah.
You know, skin and membrane make it not okay, like a bat. Yeah. People love to have parrots. Nobody wants a bat hanging off of them.
And spikes down its back, I've heard.
Yeah, like, spikes down
glowing
its
glowing eyes.
Glowing eyes and claws. And
aren't they bigger? Like, aren't they like 2 or 3 foot tall? Like they say, they
well,
seem pretty good
size,
right?
Some
of
them say 3 to 4. Some people say up to 5 feet occasionally, but very sort of like a humanoid body in terms of like a head, 2 arms and 2 legs. But sometimes running on all, as if they can run on all fours and 2 legs. And I've actually got probably 7 or 8 reports of people who said they saw wings.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's
now never got cool. Never got a single report like that from the US, mm-hmm. of, at least of a chupacabra. You know, there are wing weird reports in here in the US. But as far as these creatures are concerned, the winged angle of the chupacabra to me has only ever surfaced in Puerto Rico and Mexico. And South America. I've never got any wing reports from the US. But then again, you know, I mean, people talk about other winged creatures in the US. So maybe there is a tie-in. I don't know. But I haven't got anywhere near, you know, in the US.
I got to ask you this, too, because about your Bigfoot book coming up, which is like the encyclopedia of Bigfoot.
Yeah, that's actually published by Visible Ink Press again. And if for people who've got my zombie book, it's written in the same style. It's like an A to Z of, you know, A for Abominable Snowman. Mm-hmm.
Z for Zana.
Yeah, exactly. Zana actually is in there with the Z.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, and each entry is about 800 words long, and there's hundreds of photographs and art. That's Visible Ink are really good at doing that. They go out to like agencies and get, you know, hundreds of pictures so that, you know, to make it really well illustrated.
So you didn't go into your theory about that, because we've talked to you about it before and people bring it up all the time because it aggravates some of the Bigfooters when you talk about the UFO link that could possibly be to Bigfoot.
Oh yeah, there's like entries in there on the UFO angle. There's
because people get mad about that.
Oh,
there's
do?
Some of those Bigfoot researchers get pissed at you for bringing that up.
Oh, okay.
But you know, it's there.
Well,
it's
like,
a strange thing.
Yeah. I mean, there's entries in that book, which will be out in September, so not long away, on like invisibility and Bigfoot, mm-hmm. infrasound and Bigfoot, UFOs and Bigfoot. Now, you know, I don't talk about these cases just for the sake of it. I mean, it's not great. I mean, I'll be the first to admit the reports of Bigfoot sort of becoming invisible or strange lights being seen around it or vanishing in a flash of light, they don't make up, you know, 50% or even probably 5% of the reports. It's probably 2 or 3. You know, I mean, I'm generalizing there. I don't know. But what I can tell you is that almost certainly there's not a single, hardly a Bigfoot researcher out there who hasn't got, throughout the course of their career as a Bigfoot investigator, hasn't got at least, you know, a handful of those kind of reports. Now, my view is if it's just an unknown ape and nothing else at all, well, there shouldn't be any reports like that. It's not like people go to Africa and study the gorillas and they say, well, the gorilla faded away or vanished in a flash of light.
Yeah, or had infrasound, messed up my thinking.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So why should we even have one report with Bigfoot? The fact that we get, there probably are hundreds of those types of reports on file, but a lot of people dismiss them as hoaxes, misidentification, you know, whatever. But for me, this is coming from the witnesses. So to me, it's the wrong thing to do. If you're an investigator, to specifically select which data you're going to go with and which witnesses you're going to believe because it doesn't fit in with your little nice scenario. Mm-hmm. I don't do that. I try and study it all. And to me, you cannot leave out the weirder aspects because it is a significant portion of it. And if people don't like it, well, that's too bad, you know. I mean,
but it's there. Like you said, you can't ignore it. No, why would you leave that part out of the story?
Well, because some, you know, a lot of researchers of Bigfoot are so, they've sort of given themselves over to the idea that it's just an ape. And, you know, if you back yourself into a corner and you're not open to anything else and you're just sure it's this, you know, if you then say, well, I'm not going to support any other theory, and then that theory collapses, they look stupid.
You're 100% right. Yeah. That's what we're always saying. You have to keep an open mind
on everything, on all of this.
Because if you form an idea, And say 5 years later, you haven't changed that idea at all. Well, then you haven't really learned anything. And you're supposed to, as you get older, learn more.
Yes.
You know what I mean? If you're not learning anymore, then you're actually failing.
Well, it's in this.
I'm completely different a mindset on things that I did 5 years ago.
Well, and what's funny is as a in general, as a group of people that study esoteric and fringe topics, they condemn academia for having that same mindset.
Yeah.
Yet a lot of them get stuck in the same mindset.
Well,
they hang their hat on one theory and they stick with it, but they're not, I don't know, because you bring up some good points. There really are a lot of strange cases of stuff. Yeah, there's a lot of reports that they sound just like a wood ape. That's it. It's just, but then there's a lot of reports you're like, but that sounds like something that's interdimensional. That sounds like something you're like, this doesn't just vanish. There's white-tailed deer and, and so, don't just vanish like that. They don't do these things. No. You're like, what happened here?
Yeah, and I think when you go down that path of ignoring data, you're in danger of sort of, you're basically self-censoring yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
And which is insane. And so, I mean, if tomorrow a Bigfoot got hit by a car and it was found just to be an ape, you know, an unknown type of ape, but an ape, then I would accept that. And I would say, well, either those cases were distortions or people just got it playing wrong or whatever, or hoaxes. But I don't think that is going to happen because of the trend of what we've had so far. You know, we've seen no evidence about Bigfoot dying and never being found, never gets hit by vehicles. You know, there was that big ironic thing where the one guy dressed as Bigfoot
and got run over.
Yeah, by those girls, right?
Yeah, that's like, so, I mean, it's tragic for the family, but it's ironic that when somebody thinks they've actually hit a Bigfoot, it turns out to be a man. So, in other words, Bigfoot still never gets hit by a car.
And
there's got to be, you know, most people never see a mountain lion in the wild or a bear, but people do. And occasionally a mountain lion gets hit by a truck or whatever in the mountains of, you know, Seattle or wherever. But Bigfoot eludes us 100% of the time with a 100% success rate.
He's the reigning world champion hide and go seek.
He's batting a thousand.
Yeah. And that shouldn't happen. And you shouldn't have the anomaly cases if it's just a gorilla. So if people, you know, if researchers don't like what I do, you know, I simply don't care because the research has to be done in that angle because it's whether people like it or not, it is part of the mystery.
So. Well, and you're given all the information. You're like, this is it. This is what I found.
Yeah.
This is the whole thing.
Well, I have to ask you, Nick, now that we got you here in studio, and I'm going to put you on the spot for just a little bit.
Uh-oh.
The Patterson-Gimlin film.
Uh-huh.
I want to know what your true thoughts are about the Patterson-Gimlin film because That's always the biggest question when it comes to the subject of Bigfoot.
Do you want me to give mine first?
Yeah, sure. You can give
that way it takes Nick off the spot a little bit.
No, I don't mind. Go on. Yeah.
I'm torn.
Yep.
And the reason I'm torn is this. Knowing the background of the men that filmed it makes me believe it was a hoax. Also, though, I don't know. You know, it's one of those things. I just think it's funny. And I've told you and I've discussed this at length.
And I think it's an excellent point.
It's the very first video that was ever produced that anybody even saw what the alleged Bigfoot was supposed to look like. And people go, well, it moves like an ape and not like a man. So that means it's real. And a lot of people go, well, it moves like a man. So that means it's a man in a suit. What if Bigfoot does move just like a man?
Mm-hmm.
And also, too, no matter what this video came out was, if it skipped, if everywhere Bigfoot, if it pranced or it skipped and people saw that, would we be getting reports today of they saw skipping Bigfoot? Mm-hmm. That's the way Bigfoot moved, because that was the first thing. Because if the very first episode, video I've ever showed you of something, say a fish in the sea, and you, Nick, had never seen this and we don't really have a lot of information about it, but blurry photos of a fish in the sea, but I showed you a video of one, then that would be what stuck in your mind from that day forward was, well, that's really what it looks like. So I'm going to try to make it out in my mind as this is what it's supposed to look like in these pictures.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder if, did that really start the ball rolling to lead what people think? Is Bigfoot really nothing like that? Is it more man-like or is it more ape-like? But that video being that it is either real or not real. If it's not real, then it's led us down a path that maybe that's not what Bigfoot really looks like.
Mm-hmm.
But if it is real, you know, then I don't know. I just personally, I find it hard to believe that that is a legit video.
Mm. Well, I would actually agree with you. I mean, people have asked me my opinion on it before, and it's honestly not fence-sitting to say that I don't know. You know, some days I look at it and I think it's a guy in a suit.
Yeah.
Other times I don't. Now, what I would say is that, you know, Bob Gimlin, who was with Roger Patterson when the film was took, I mean, I've met Bob and hung out with him at a conference and chatted with him. He comes across to me as totally genuine, and I don't think he is a hoaxer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so if the film's a hoax,
he wasn't privy to it.
If it was a hoax, I don't think Bob Gimlin had anything to do at all to do with hoaxing it. I don't believe that at all. I think he legitimately believes he saw a Bigfoot.
And if it was a hoax, that would be the best way to do it, wouldn't it?
Well, it probably would. Yeah, if you've got somebody.
As if I was trying to trick you and make you believe in the whole thing, and I wouldn't tell you I was going to do it.
Yeah.
I would just have Kyle do something, and you'd be like, holy moly, I saw it too. And you would agree, and you and I would agree with our stories and go on from there.
Yeah, and I think that's an important thing, is that to me, you know, Bob does come across 100% as a sincere, credible person. Now, whether or not, I mean, the thing is with Patterson, I mean, you know, Patterson was a controversial guy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the image in the figure, I should say, in the footage, you know, has breasts.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, you know, there's artwork that sort of predates the footage that kind of looks like, you know, that Patterson had, that kind of looks like the figure in the film, you know. So you have to wonder which came first, you know, that kind of thing. So. And then, of course, you have the people who said, well, I was the guy in the suit.
Right.
That goes down another
Bob is it Hieronymus?
Bob Hieronymus. Uh-huh. Now, again, you can either take, as the Bigfoot community has, you can either take one or two approaches. Either the story's true that it's in the suit, or he isn't. And if he is, you know, then the case collapses. If he isn't, why say you are in the suit? You know, so it's not so cut and dry. But I think it's like a lot of famous photographs, whether it's in the Bigfoot field or the Loch Ness Monster or the UFO subject, if they collapse, it does have a significant detrimental effect on the relevant mystery. But if, say, for example, something happened and the Patterson film did collapse tomorrow, yeah, it would be a big disaster. But what I would tell people is that don't forget that there's still a massive amount of good witness testimony. You know, you tend to find people only fake things because the phenomenon is known about. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody decides to fake a flying saucer picture because they know about flying saucers. In other words, the phenomena predate the hoax.
That's right. They're not just making something up and trying to make a flying pumpkin.
No, that's right. So I think that's an important thing to remember, is that the film was shot in 67. If it is shown to be a fake one day, well, we have sightings and good credible reports that long predate 67.
So, I covered some in the last show from the 1800s.
Yeah, exactly. We have these wild man reports.
Exactly.
And things.
Exactly.
Yeah, from the newspapers. And
well, and also, too, it's a good point to make that believing or disbelieving in that video does not take away from the fact that who believes or disbelieves in Bigfoot.
Mm.
You can still be a researcher and then just go, well, I don't agree with that piece of footage. That's not the Holy Grail. And a lot of people hold that up as the Holy Grail. If you don't believe in that, then you're not a real Bigfoot researcher. And I don't believe any piece of evidence should be held along those lines.
Well, actually, that is, with some researchers, that is the case. You know, they firmly believe that Bigfoot's real, but they don't believe the Patterson film's real.
Uh-huh.
You know, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, the one thing I would say against it being a hoax is that if it is a hoax, it wasn't just a case of somebody going to the local party store or whatever and buying and hiring a gorilla.
This is true.
It doesn't hang odd like a pair of pants and a shirt. You know, it looks like if it's a person inside it, you know, it's been carefully and skillfully padded out to make it move as, you know, the muscles would move and things like
that.
They
put some work into it to make
absolutely.
And the face as well. The face clearly isn't like a gorilla mask, you know, where if you put a mask on, you know, and the mask sticks out like an inch in front or half an inch in front of the eyes, that kind of thing. But it's like it's all seamless. If you look at the close-ups, the face looks seamless in terms of how it's constructed. And I also sort of question the issue of if you're going to fake it, why put breasts on it?
Yeah,
you know, exactly. Why would you?
That's
think
what everybody's
to do
gone
that?
To. Yeah,
So in other words, there are a lot of things in favor of the film, but again, to me, sometimes when you watch it, you know, various speeds and everything, it kind of does look a bit like expect a guy in a suit to look.
If I watch it like stabilized and in full speed, I'm always like, that is so fake, it hurts.
Yeah.
I'm like, that is, it's just not real. And then there's times like you said, I go back and I watch and I'm like, But I don't know if I'm caught up in the hype.
I've flip-flopped probably a dozen times.
Or more. I don't know if I'm caught up in the hype. I tell everybody on the show, I want Bigfoot to be real.
Mm-hmm.
Probably more than any other thing that we cover, I want it to be real. But I don't know.
Yeah.
Until I have something happen to me personally, I can never say one way or the other. Yeah. But I will say that on that video, it's hard for me to believe because just like we were talking about, with Roger Patterson and the whole deal. Maybe he, I don't know what kind of guy he was.
Mm-hmm.
Never met him, you know. I have no clue, you know, the whole thing. Everybody that talks about him, you know, some people have great things to say about him, you know, back in the day. And other people said, you know, he was a shyster and he was a con man, things like that. I don't know. Maybe he was very well thought out. Maybe he thought, you know, what would be more believable, a male or a female? Well, let me make it female. You know, I don't know. I don't know what kind of thought would go into it because I know that there has been hoaxes proved later on that was very, very well thought out, very elaborate, you know. I guess my thing keeps coming down to this always. And of course, I know it's I want it to be real. I look at that video and like I said, I want this all to be real. But I don't know that he ever made the money and the fame and the fortune that he wanted to off of that video. So if he would have really hoaxed it, I guess the outcome wasn't what he expected.
Well, no, and he died young as well.
Yes.
You know, so there was, you know, you got that angle. But I think the problem is, ironically, the clearer and the better the footage or something, it actually often makes people think it is fake because they think it's too good.
When they stabilize it, and I watch it at full speed, I'm that way. I'm like, this can't be a wild animal. This has got to be a guy planning this. But then I also, right now, on this microphone, just now thinking about it, I'm like, but how hard would it be to run in a suit across uneven ground?
And this film's been scrutinized.
Like, damn. Mm-hmm.
This film's been scrutinized for years. Mm-hmm. I mean, just like we were talking off air before, about the Roswell slides, they were able to prove within 2 days that it was fake.
Yes.
They've been studying this piece of film since the 60s, and no one's still been able to prove that.
You don't know one way or the other.
Yeah. Right.
Damn it. I don't think we've come along anything here, man. Nothing. Man.
Well, you know, and I always thought, too, is even if he was a shyster, a snake oil salesman, a con man, stuff, maybe he still really had a real experience.
That's true.
What if you were like a notorious mobster, but you still had a real experience? Doesn't mean it didn't really happen.
That's true.
I think it comes down to one thing. It's either real and the creatures are somehow related to us in a fashion, and that's why, you know, some people do think it's just a guy in a suit. If it's a fake, I think a lot went into it, and I think Gimlin, you know, could have been unknowingly, you know, I said I don't think he knowingly at all took part in any.
Well, I've seen some interviews with him, and you're not the only person I've talked to that's met him.
Yeah.
And they say the exact same thing about the guy, that he is 100% genuine.
Yeah. Now, whether he was duped, that's another question. Yeah. So if it's a fake, I would say he was duped. I don't think he was part of it. If it's real, the big irony is, how do we prove it's real? Yeah. You know?
So I guess we all unanimously agree that we don't know.
Yeah.
Sorry, folks.
All of us are 50-50, folks. We have no clue.
I guess the one thing that would resolve it all is if we got a body,
yeah,
and to what degree does it resemble the one in the film? Now, if you look at...
Well, you know what? That's a really good point. Yeah. If one of them got killed, then we can look at it and be like, it doesn't match anything.
Well,
like that.
You know...
But then there's still an argument that there's different species.
Well, that's right.
The Sasquatch is different than the skunk ape, and the orang pandek is different.
Well, that's true. I mean, I've spoken to some people who've seen Bigfoot, and they've said that the arms were sort of like long. They were like, you know, you imagine like a gorilla,
mm-hmm.
you know, like really long arms, almost knuckle walking type creature. You know, they said that the arms of the creature were more sort of lumbering and far longer than the ones in the Patterson film. But then again, you know, you look at, if it is real, I mean, people talk about the Pacific Northwest wood sightings. You know, some of those reports are like 7-8 feet tall.
Yes.
Big lumbering things. You look at the skunk ape, it's more sort of 6 to 7 thinner, more agile, and really doesn't directly resemble that. You know, there seems to be some differences. So,
and don't we have 3-toed species in Texas and some 4-toed species?
Yeah, and that's where I go again down like this paranormal path that, you know, how many kinds of ape could they be running around the US?
Right, exactly.
And not get caught. I mean, one's enough, never mind 2 or 3 variations on a species or whatever. So,
well, Nick, thank you so much for coming over and spending the day with us and hanging out.
No, you're welcome.
We'll wrap it up right quick, folks. And then for all you that are elite listeners, you're going to catch more of us three chewing the fat going on here on the Thursday show. But for everybody else, thank you so, so much, Nick. We can't wait to read the rest of the books. Now I got a stack here in front of me now. Now I'm going to have to learn German. I'm going to have to get out the other book. That's what I'm going to get out my American copy. And I'm going to have to go through. What I'm going to do is I'm going to memorize a page.
Impress people.
I'm going to. I promise you. I'm going to memorize a page out of this
there
book.
You go.
And then I'm going to go, let me read this to you. And I'm going to show it to you. And then I'm just going to read it off like I know exactly what it says. And then I'm just going to put it down. And if they ask me to read another part, I'll be like, no, I don't feel like it.
Yeah, I never thought about doing that. Yeah, I've got to do that.
I'll be impressive.
Now, where can people buy your books? Please plug your website. And also, I know
where you're going to be.
Yeah, if people want to come out and meet you. We talked about that at the beginning of the show.
Okay. Well, the new book, Secret History, you can get it off Amazon. You can also buy it off the shelves in Barnes & Noble. All my books are on Amazon. Some of them, some of the other ones as well, are on, you can buy them Barnes & Noble. People can reach me at my blog, World of Whatever, which is Nick Redfern Fortean, Fortean, nickredfernfortean.blogspot.com, or just hit me up at Facebook or Twitter. And as far as what's coming up, last weekend in May, I've got the Contact in the Desert conference in Joshua Tree, California. Then the following weekend, I'm speaking at the MUFON conference in Ohio. It's not the main MUFON conference, but it's the Ohio group of MUFON. They have a yearly conference. So I'm going to be speaking about the Men in Black at that conference.
Right on. And you can also read his articles over at Mysterious Universe with our friends Ben and Aaron. I know you write some really neat articles over there on a weekly basis, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I like to write for them because, you know, they give you an open book.
Let you just go for it.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if it's UFOs, Bigfoot, witchcraft.
Whatever you wake up feeling like doing.
Exactly.
It's like, I'm doing it now. Yeah, this is it. This is what we're doing.
Well, thanks for coming on, Nick.
Thanks, guys.
You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. I hope everybody enjoyed that talk we had with Mr. Nick Redfern. Now, for you folks that are not Elite members, now's your chance to sign up because we actually have another 20 or 30 minutes of talking with Nick Redfern that we're going to play on Thursday's show. So if you want to do that, go over to expandedperspectives.com, click on the top right link. It'll take you through. You can sign up with PayPal, and it's pretty easy. It's $5 a month or $55 a year, and it's really neat. Not only that, but if you sign up, you'll have access to all the other Elite shows that we've done. So we've got about 45 shows over there now.
Mm-hmm.
from all different types of topics. And they're basically the same as what you hear here, at an hour to an hour and 15 minutes every episode. If basically, if you like Expanded Perspectives, you're going to like Expanded Perspectives Elite. It's basically the same thing.
It's just a whole lot different. Just doing another one. That's it.
Yeah. So what else is going on this week?
Man, we're just, I got some makeup hours. I say makeup hours, if that's what you call them. I guess it would be like continuing education hours I got to go do. So I'm going to be stuck in a college
Nobody
classroom.
Nobody likes that. Everybody has to do it, though.
Yeah, and I'm not looking forward to it. You know, I don't like to be stuck in the classroom. It's going to make me crazy. So, but I will say this, being that it is just hours, just education hours, I don't have to test to really pay attention. Not that I would have anyway.
Right.
I'll be catching up along a lot of my reading.
Absolutely. Yeah, we got a whole bunch of new books that have come in, actually.
Yeah, so I'm going to have to get on the ball on that whole deal. So that's my game plans for the week. Try to keep my head down so I don't get stormed on as much as we've been going since my toes are webbing. And I guess try not to talk out of turn while I'm in that class.
Right. All right, everybody. Well, have a good week for you elite members. We'll see you over there on Thursday. We'll be hearing the second half of that interview. For everybody else, we'll talk to you next Monday.
Peace.
Cool.